Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
The Toddcast Podcast. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and at toddhancock.ca.
Yeah, okay. I think we're going to be...
Oh, there we go.
It's back to audio. No, it's kidding.
I love it. You're like, I got to head to the jam space. I got to go to the rehearsal. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to do
well enough. Well, the cool thing is the rehearsal spot is at my father-in-law's, right? So he's out of town for a month. So I got this whole mansion to myself and the rehearsal hall. So I thought, you know, I'm not going to get guaranteed not to get interrupted during this one. So
nice. How you been, man? I mean, it's been a couple of years probably since we've had a good chin wag. It's been
a while. Yeah, it has, hasn't it? It's been a few years. I think it's pre-pandemic.
I would say it's probably pre-pandemic. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we texted here and there and you know, kept in touch, but yeah, it's been a lot's happened during, I mean, I'm sure it's the same old story for everybody. A lot's happened in the last 4 years. So
yeah. Cause I mean, you know, you're in a band now called Trigger Mafia.
Yeah.
Which is fucking rad. Your band's deadly. But prior to that, like you had played with me and May in the country band here in Vancouver that you had.
I think that's the last time we kind of talked.
Yeah, and like you played a show at the railway for us, and it was a great show, great turnout. There was tons of people there. It was such a fun night. And then suddenly it almost seemed like as if it was overnight, fucking boom, COVID's here, the pandemic, let's kill everybody's life for the next couple of years.
Fuck, no kidding. And COVID killed that band. It really did. It was one of those things where, even politically, it just got weird. You know, management was seeing things one way and some members were seeing the other. And I'm stuck in the middle going, everybody just stay quiet. Let's just make it about the music. Mm. And so I just sort of, in that case, I tend to have this tendency of just trying to do everything I can to keep it going and keep it together. In this case, I just let it go. I just went, okay. And so what happened was took a break, and that was the birth of Trigger Mafia. It was like, I was sitting there, you know, we had the lockdown, and then myself and my go-to drummer and bass player, they're like brothers to me. They play in Trigger. They also play and they played in Me and May as well. And I said, guys, let's just get together once a week and we got to do something. And so we'd get together once a week, socially distanced, you know, it's a big rehearsal hall. And right, we just started jamming. It's kind of it was the first time I think my whole life, well, since I was a teenager and just getting together for the sake of jamming and no other agenda, it was like full circle. We did that again. We just started jamming and having fun. And all of a sudden, songs started coming to life, and that was the birth of Trigger Mafia. So that's kind of, yeah. And then, you know, going back to Me and May, a couple of years go by now, and our manager, Clyde, has started making calls to get gigs for Trigger Mafia. And those same promoters that go, hey, what's going on with Me and May? That kept happening. So he go, do you want extra gigs? And I said, so... Trigger Mafia goes on the road with a female backup singer. She's not in the videos or anything, but you know, we have a female backup singer to do some of the high stuff. And I asked her, I go, can you sing country? She goes, oh, I can figure it out. So we would go do Trigger Mafia night. Then the next night we get changed with different set list. And then we go do Me and May. And then, so that summer we're like doing both bands, and I go back to Clyde and I go, Clyde, do you think we should bring Me and May back to life? And his advice was, yes and no. And I went, what do you mean? He goes, well, let's just rebrand. Let's kind of start fresh. And then that's where, so we decided to change the name, started writing new songs, and now we have West Coast Slackers. So back to country rock. It's a little more country rock, and I think, than Me and May was, but yeah, there you go. I just answered a bunch of questions there, didn't I?
Yeah. And you know, the thing with that I find for Trigger Mafia and certainly Me and May as well, is that it almost sounds like it comes effortless for you. Like, is there a genre? Can you work in either of those genres easier, I guess?
They're easier and harder in different ways. Like I find songwriting in the country world is easier. It's that old saying, right? Three chords and the truth. I just find it more natural. I think it's more because when I was growing up as a kid, I wouldn't see my dad often. And when I did, we'd be driving around his car, we'd be on a trip, we'd be in a hotel, and he'd be listening to the Eagles the whole time. So that was sort of one of the first bands I fell in love with. And that was kind of country rock and country and stuff. And then, of course, as I got older and I got into Van Halen and all these bands, and then I got into rock for a long time. But I find writing country is a little, I don't want to say any of it's easy, but it seems to come a little more natural. Mm. But rocking out is what is sort of, it's weird. I guess I'm a little bit of a dual personality. I love to rock, but I also love country. So, they're both easy and hard in different ways. You know, mm. it's easier to gig with the country rock gig because singing is way easier. With Trigger Mafia, I'm screaming the whole time. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm.
So you mentioned like the Eagles and stuff with the old band. Mm-hmm. What other bands do you remember? Like what are some of your first musical memories as a kid?
Oh man. I'm going to date myself, but I was a really little kid when sort of late 70s, early 80s AM radio was big, kind of before the MTV revolution. Mm-hmm. I was a tiny little, I was 5, 6, 7 years old. And I remember sitting in the back seat of the car, my mom driving around listening to AM radio. So I fell in love with like Hall & Oates and all the stuff that was big at the time, Christa Berg, that sort of soft rock, Blue Eyed Soul rock, And then as I got older and the testosterone started to kick in, that's when I started getting into hard rock and Metallica.
Yeah. And so was there like a certain friend that was like kind of instrumental for you getting down that path? Like, can you kind of tip the hat to a couple buds or?
Oh, you mean like buds that got me into it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, there's yes. So that's a good story. So a buddy of mine, he lives out here now, and he actually played in a couple bands that did well. I can't remember the name of them right now, but he's a pro player for a long time. And we met in high school. We met out in Quebec of all places. And he was from here out here on the West Coast, but he got in trouble and he got sent out west. And I had moved back or out east to live with his grandparents, and I had moved out there too. So we're two kind of lost souls hanging out in the hallways. And I met him in gym of all places. I said, "Hey, do you play music?" "Yeah." "So do I." We kind of hooked it up. And so at the time, I was still listening to softer stuff, Bryan Adams and Michael Jackson. And, I would never have admitted that back then. And I was kind of, and he introduces me to Metallica. He introduces me to Master of Puppets. And I went, holy shit. At first I was like, what the hell is this? And then he set me on that journey and we went to music school together. We got into Fusion and Rush and just all kinds of things. So yes, my buddy Jay Terry, if he's out there listening, thanks Jay. I love you, brother.
That's too good. I do remember that in high school. Hey, like the people that listened to Metallica were a little bit outcasts. They were the ones that were kind of just out in the far corner of the art room. Maybe it had just smoked a doob on the way into high school. You know what I mean? Like it was.
Well, there seemed to be, when I was going to high school, there was like two groups. There was sort of the guys that would wear the jean jackets and the long greasy hair and have patches on their back. And then there was the sort of jocks and the nerd, whatever. And I always was kind of didn't fit in anywhere, but I would hang out more with the guys with the patches and the long hair. And I ended up growing my hair and just sort of, and you're right. We were kind of the outcasts. And I kind of liked that actually. I kind of liked, and it just makes me laugh when you see how mainstream Metallica is now. And right. There's no way you would have listened to Metallica in high school,
No. Like I remember when Kill 'Em All came out, like it was too heavy for what I was into at that time. Like And even at that time, I was still into like Whitesnake, Rat, Motley mm-hmm. Crue, right? But like for some reason that Kill 'Em All and Ride the Lightning were just too much. And then once Master came out, like it was okay. Hold up. hold on a second. Like these guys have something that no other band has.
Yeah, it's genius. It was just like, I remember just my mind being blown, going, I'm probably 14 or something. I go, what the hell is this? Like, it was just, totally. But I liked it. And you're right. The earlier stuff, I didn't get either. I'd heard the stuff and it was just too heavy and screamy. And I don't know. I just want to, and I'd secretly go listen to Bryan Adams or the Thriller album by Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just kind of like, No,
true, but that's what we were forced with. Like, like you say, the AM radio, and even to a certain degree, like, not MTV, but like, what would we have? Like, Good Rockin' Tonight,
Yeah, totally. These
would be the videos that we would see is Duran Duran, Michael Jackson, Hall & Oates, Tina Turner. Like, we weren't seeing, the Four Horsemen. or you know, they didn't make videos.
Well, it's underground. It was that. That's at that time, people forget how underground Metallica was. Almost part of that underground punk thing. Like, it was just so underground. And you're right. It was like, what the hell? And you're right. It's a totally different world now. I mean, there is no, the internet is almost the opposite. Like, the internet generation is the opposite of what we grew up in. It was the opposite. There was very little outlets. You would just kind of, you discovered a couple of little things and that was it. And so, you know, when something like the first two Metallica albums come along, you're like, what the hell is this? Where now you can Google anything and find anything. You know what I mean? It's a different kind of world, you know? So, yeah. And it blew my mind. And it sort of kind of, it all of a sudden, you know, but you know what the big moment for me was, actually, going back to that original question, is Van Halen. Because Van Halen for me married my love for pop, but my love for aggression. It was the perfect band. It was like, what? It was because with pop, as the testosterone started kicking in, I felt like pop lacked aggression. But the Metallica, the early Metallica stuff and the other thrash stuff, the stuff that the hard rock stuff that kids were listening to, I was like, man, I don't hear the songs, you know? And then when they came along, it was this perfect marriage of like aggression, hard rock and pop songs all in one. And so that's really what kicked me off, was that band.
Yeah. And how crazy is it that Lars Ulrich was right with Napster and stealing music and like the slippery slope that we've been going down literally since that moment.
Yeah, but you can't fight it though. The problem is, like, I can respect and appreciate what Lars did. I think I was one of the few at the time. Like, I get it. Like, what the argument he had, and it was a great argument. He said, "Look, you know, if I own a Cadillac dealership and I leave one of the doors open and the engine running, you can't just hop in that Cadillac and drive off and not expect to get arrested. You know, so why can you come into, you know, online and steal my music?" And I understood that argument, but at the same time, when it comes to entertainment and technology, you can't fight it. You got to roll with it. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's other ways to, because I hear people complain a lot about, oh, you know, we can't make money recording. Yes, you can. If you're willing to tour, you can, you know what I mean? In fact, more than ever.
Well, so, that's what it is. People just aren't ready to jump in the water. And it's like, come on, jump on in. It's quite nice if you actually do what you're supposed to do, right?
Well, the funny thing is it's kind of come full circle, because it's what I love the most about the music business. I love playing live and I love touring. I love living out of hotel rooms. I love traveling and I love playing live. It's the thing. So I look at it as no better time to do it, really. Like, because the only way anybody's going to make money off you is if you're touring. So it's in everybody's interest to get you on the road. You know, the managers and the labels and they want you out there, because they're going to take a piece of it all, but that's fine. At least I'll get tour.
Yeah, hell yeah. And so, like, obviously you did a ton of touring, you know, pre-COVID and stuff, and now we're back kind of, you know, normal or as close to, or whatever, we're getting there. Like, does it feel like that? Does it feel like, you know, like has the entertainment world kind of opened back up? And like, obviously we lost a ton of, you know, venues across, not just here in Vancouver, but across the country and across the continent. Like, does it feel that it's starting to heal?
Oh yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, you know, both West Coast Slackers and Trigger Mafia, they're technically baby bands. They're brand new. We've just, you know, we're on our second EP with Trigger Mafia, and the gigs are coming in, you know, and it wasn't that hard to put a tour together, and there's more to come, you know? So yeah, absolutely. I think you can thank, I mean, people are going to probably hate me saying this, but you can thank people like Taylor Swift, because, you know, that's the new model. It's going to be all about the live show. She's making it all about the live show. You know what I mean? Like, that's where they're making their money. So I think everybody else is figuring that out. And you're seeing it at all levels, at the club level, at the, you know, I think the club scene has changed a lot, though. It's a different kind of, it's almost going right back to the 70s, I think. I mean, I wasn't in the club scene in the 70s. I wasn't of age yet. But when I study it and I research and I hear about it, back in the 70s, lots of bands were playing cover, like Trooper and Loverboy, and all these bands started out playing cover gigs, and they were busy all the time, and they're playing six nights a week, and then they just kind of morphed in, they had a following, and then they morphed into getting a record deal and they earned their stripes, and then the rest is history, right? And it's kind of coming back to that. I think, you know, bands are building followings by playing covers, and it's dads and their sons. There's all kinds of stuff going on online. And then they're following it up with by touring and doing shows. Right. So I think it's an exciting time. I'm tired of hearing people talk about how the internet's changed, whatever. I think it's a great era. I really do. I think I'm excited about it, to be honest.
And how about, did you hear the stat the other day, like last week or week and a half ago, talking about Taylor Swift and the fact that she now has the most weeks on the Billboard 200 album chart, more than the Beatles. Like, granted, she's been doing it way longer. They did it in 7 years. She's done it in 20. But the fact remains, it doesn't, like, time aside, she now is bigger than the Beatles.
Absolutely. And how are they doing it? Touring, touring,
Touring.
touring, right? And not only that, I thought it was a brilliant move. I thought that, I mean, there was kind of criticism on both sides a little bit, that move about kind of re-releasing all their stuff. You know what
Yeah.
that was, in my opinion, in my humble
Savvy,
opinion?
savvy. Like, if you don't want to give me the masters, then I'll just re-record them. I am the artist.
It was kind of a tricky way to do a greatest hits, is really what it was. It was another for
Totally.
the kids in a modern way. It was like, you know, now they can download both albums. I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant move. Brilliant
Yeah.
move. You
Yeah.
know what
Big
I
time. I thought the same thing, actually. Yeah. And
mean?
who was your first concert? What was the first
Oh
band
boy.
or festival that you saw? Who knows?
Let me think, let me think, let me think. Okay, my first sort of live band concert thing. I was in high school in Winnipeg, and I'm gonna date myself again. Harlequin had come to our high school because they were from Winnipeg, and but they didn't tell us. It was a surprise. And there was, you know how you have those pep rally, whatever you call it, you know, you get together in the gymnasium and, oh, we're gonna have an assembly. And then all of a sudden, ladies and gentlemen, why don't you, and it was Harlequin. I was like, what? And I remember being 13 or whatever, going, and the rush I felt, what the hell is this? Like these guys in jumpsuits, and it was loud, and they're playing, and I went, wow, like it just blew me away. And then sort of my first concert was Van Halen when I was a teenager. I saw them in Montreal, and I cried the whole time. It was like a spiritual, it was like I'd already was in love with Van Halen, Eddie Van Halen, for years. He was my favorite player. And then just being in the room, and you know, just I was it was like a, it was a religious experience. It was so cool, you know.
Cool.
And yeah, those are my first two. There's lots after that, but yeah.
Oh, of course, yeah. It never ends, right? And so what was your feeling when David Lee Roth left the band? Were you like, what the? Were you
Well,
old enough to give a shit? Like, did you care it to that degree?
what's funny is I discovered the band in 1984. That's the weird thing. I went back and found all those other albums. So how I discovered Van Halen was, I was in high school, and they had come to Winnipeg. They on the jump to on the 1984 tour, and I'm looking around, and at the time I'm still listening to my pop stuff or whatever, and I'm looking around, and everyone's wearing this Van Halen t-shirt, you know, the shirts from the tour. And I go, what's going on? What happened? Wait, oh, this Van Halen. And of course I had a Walkman at the time, and somebody had a cassette and says, you got to check this out. And I went, holy shit. And that was it. That was like a turn. Oh, I was just, and I
What?
bought every cassette, every, you know, at the point, at like all the first six albums. And that's when I really wanted to be a lead guitar player. I just went, whoa. And I just, yeah, it changed the course of my life. So that was sort of, so, but at the time I when that happened, I was kind of, I didn't care. I just was so busy listening to the first six albums. You know what I mean? And then of course, when the 5150 came out, of course I bought that album the day it came out. I never cared, because as long as Eddie was in the band, that's all I cared about. You know, I wasn't even a singer back then. That came later, by sort of necessity. You know, I was always sort of the best backup, you know, singer in the band and whatever. And now over time, I just got tired of dealing with singers. I just started singing. So it was never on my radar. I just, Eddie Van Halen, that's all I cared about. Oh, he's still in the band? Good, I'm buying the record. You know what I mean?
Okay, so the switch over to Sammy Hagar didn't really, you weren't like, ah, whatever. Like, I was kind of, I remember being the same way. I do remember, like, you know, watching Good Rockin' Tonight and, you know, Panama and Hot for Teacher. Hot for Teacher is a great video. Oh my God. But then I do remember, like, when Sammy Hagar stuff came out, I was like, fuck, this might be just as good. Like,
I thought the same thing. I loved it. To me, it was just more Eddie Van Halen, and I actually became a fan of Sammy. And to me, they're, like I said, I don't, there's not one or the other for me. It's just
no,
one
same.
big body of work, and I love it all. And they evolved, right? And so did I. I was getting older, and that's when I, and because of my love for pop anyways, I just admired the songwriting. In my opinion, the songwriting is better on the second phase, but the first phase is just cooler. I don't know, it's hard to explain.
Yeah, no, dude, you nailed it. It's not hard to explain. You just nailed it. And
Okay, there.
so have you kind of kept up in it, like, with Eddie's kid?
A
Wolfgang,
little bit,
and
kind of keeping a t
because, dude,
I just.
that mammoth WVH, man, is awesome. Dude, it's awesome.
Bang. He, like, he's a monstrous player. Holy, I mean, no surprise though. I mean, if you're going
right. to your dad, like, you're sitting beside like virtuoso okay, here, like.
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, the Van Halen brothers are legendary. I think Alex is a little underrated. I think he gets a little overlooked sometimes, but they're monster players. Monster. It's not even just the fact that Eddie's flashy. If you know, they've got this jazz blues classical background. You know, they were playing in their dad's jazz band when they were 13 years old. You know, I mean, these guys are monster players. And that's why when you hear a cover band try to cover a Van Halen tune, it never works because
they try to cover it. Like,
because they got this big pocket thing going on that's really hard to teach and hard to figure out. And they're just monsters on so many levels. So, yeah,
So, what's going on with your bands? You were saying you wanted to announce something. I don't know if you're ready to do that right now or
I'm announcing it here first. We did an album during the pandemic. We licensed it to a small European label, and he put it out and it got lots of great reviews. And so he encouraged us to do a follow-up. He says, "Can you do a follow-up?" And you know, we paid for the first record. Well, we got an investor to do it, and then and I said, well, I don't know. I mean, we've got one song that wasn't put up, that didn't make the record that we recorded. It was a ballad. And then I said, we don't really have the budget for it. He says, well, if I help you pay for it, will you do it? And he's never done that before. But he said, the reviews were so good. I just have a feeling about your band. And I said, well, sure. I can argue with you. So he helped pay for the EP. And so we handed in three songs. We did an acoustic version of a song. We tried to keep the budget tight. So we did an acoustic version of sort of the best song on the first record, which is Find a Better Way. And that was easy and quick, right? So it wasn't too expensive. And then we did that ballad that was already written. We threw it on there. And then we kind of went in and wrote another song. And then we did the three songs. We handed them in. He goes, can you do me one more? Can you give me one more? And I was like, and I'll help pay for that. I said, oh. And I was kind of like, you know, okay. So I was trying to think about, well, what are we going to do? He needs a song. You know, generally you kind of write the songs and then you hope for the best. But he was asking for a song. So I spend a lot of time. My son is an elite hockey player. He's a goaltender. And I spend a lot of time in hockey arenas. You know what I mean? I'm in 3, 4, or 5 days a week. You're hanging out with the parents and you're at a lot of games. And because he's big into hockey, we go to a lot of games. We go to junior games. We go to Abbotsford Canuck games. We go to the Vancouver Canucks. You know, you can see we're big fans. And so I kept hearing the same 9 songs all the time. Burn It to the Ground by Nickelback, which is awesome. You know, Thunderstruck by AC/DC. Welcome to the Jungle. But, you know, it was the same 9 songs. I thought, what if we wrote a song for that playlist? You know, I just thought, I used it as a challenge. So we kind of started with the riff. And then we started bringing out outside writers. And I even brought in 2 hockey consultants. I brought in the guy who runs my son's private league as an advisor and another buddy of mine who is big in the hockey world. And it literally so many took a village to write this song. And then
that's great.
Yeah. And then so that led to it became the lead single because it's just, wow, this is cool. But what's neat is part of the reason why it became the lead single is Cam Moon, who's the official radio guy for the Edmonton Oilers. He's an old friend of mine. He used to be the radio guy for Red Deer Rebels. And when I was in a band called Chrome, the Red Deer Rebels had picked up our song as the goal song for a couple of years. So he was a fan and we were buddies. And there's a part on the song, it's about a 10 or 11 second clip where we had originally had used the golden goal. What year was that? The 2010 Olympics, the
CBC. Crosby scoring and
10 second, Nikola over to Sidney Crosby because he's got the golden goal or whatever it's called. So we used that on the clip. And then when we send that to my buddy, who's the lawyer, he said, oh, you got to get that off there.
You can't use that. That's broadcast material. That's not yours. You can't use that.
Man, you're not going to be able to afford it. So just get it off. Yep. So that's when I reached out to Cam. I said, Cam, can you do me a favor? And would you mind doing this 10-second clip? I mean, you're a hockey radio guy. And he goes, I got to ask the Edmonton Oilers. So he sends the song to Edmonton Oilers. They loved it. And they went, yeah, just as long as you'd be, because by contract, he can't use Edmonton Oilers names. You know, if McDavid's name's used on the song, all of a sudden now we got to pay royalties.
Sure.
So what he ended up doing is he ended up coming up with a 10-second clip of the 4 of us being on the ice. You know, me and passes it over to him. He shoots, he scores. So, and that kind of caused a buzz in itself. And so we did a video for it. And now that's why we're going to Edmonton because he's going to come out after the game. And he's been going around. because he's the official radio guy, he travels with the Oilers and he goes to all the different teams, the 32 teams in North America, and he's been pitching the song. So, So, you know, it's, and we're going to be releasing it to radio soon and stuff. So yeah, we'll see where it goes. But the cool thing about a song like this is that, you know, it's, you can stay on it for years. Do you know what I mean? You can stay, it's not like you have 12 weeks and then if it doesn't take off, off you go. So maybe some teams might not pick it up till next year. That's fine. We'll stay on it for a while. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
That's cool. And so how far do you, like, do you have both bands kind of scheduled out, or like, are you taking like,
well,
Trigger Mafia at this point, or like, what do you do for that? Like, how do you decide what you're going to work on?
Well, that's interesting. That is, so for this little run, we're just going to Alberta for a few shows, and it's both bands. It's we did a Friday in Edmonton at the Starlet Room. Our Thursday. Oh,
nice. So you're going back and you're jumping from one to the next.
Yeah. I mean,
dude, so that's outstanding.
Hey, like I said, in the new music world, you got to reinvent yourself a little bit, right?
Nice.
So Thursday night, we're flying into Edmonton, and we're gonna be playing the Starlet Room, which is a cool venue in Edmonton, as Trigger Mafia, and then the next night, we're heading up to Grand Prairie. We got offered a gig to do for West Coast Slackers at a kind of a country rock bar there, and then the next night we're going to Peace River with Trigger Mafia. So it kind of all worked out, and I'm kind of seeing that more and more. And as far as West Coast Slackers go, we haven't released anything yet. I decided a whole new approach with that band was, let's go hard or go home. In other words, instead of grinding it out as an indie band, which we've done for years in different bands, I thought, what if we got lucky and approached a big time producer and seeing where that would go. And it turns out that Clyde, my manager, is old friends with Brian Howes. And I've ran into Brian over the years. He's a local boy, right? He played in the clubs. And I was a fan of his, when I was a kid, I was a big fan of Young Gun. Do you remember that? Is that,
I do. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. And I remember seeing the video on, you know, on the Friday night video or whatever shows were playing at the time. And so, and then I'd run into him over the years. And then we got on his radar and we sent him a song he really liked. He goes, yeah, let's do it. So we went in and we produced that one. And then I sent him a bunch more songs and he really liked four more songs. He says, let's do a body of work and let's do an EP. Wow. So that's what we're working on right now. We're working with Brian. And
well, because Brian's the fucking real deal. Like Daughtry, Skillet, like, you know, huge, huge albums, man. Like,
oh man, he's in the top five biggest producers in the world.
Totally. Like, wasn't there a time when Brian was like one of like the main producers for like America's Got Talent or some shit like that?
I think there's something to do with that, or I don't know the details.
Consulting
of that.
Or, like he was like, he had his fingers in the pie of that show for years and years and years.
And you know what, man? And I'm not just saying this because we're doing, he is one of the coolest guys to hang out with.
I was just going to say, and he is like one of the coolest guys.
Like down to earth rocker.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just hanging out with one of my high school buddies when I'm hanging out with him. He's just such a down to earth guy. You'd never know the amount of success just by he's such a humble
hanging
guy.
With him. No, I know for sure. And so like, so it's you guys, but like a lot of the time he'll bring in like Robin Diaz. Is Diaz part of what you're doing as well or no?
No, right now it's Carl Dakari. Did I say that? He's engineering and then Brian's doing all the producing right now. And then basically from there, we'll see where it goes. We're just going to finish the EP and kind of see where it goes. You know, obviously when someone's name like Brian is on there, it's going
to, they'll get people ears to listen to it and see like what's up. Like if Brian's hearing it, like what are we not hearing maybe? Or like, we've never heard of this band. That'll open doors, man, like big time.
Yeah, and it's a total different approach, right? It's taking risks in different ways. I mean, you know, we had to raise money to get a big time producer and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, like I said, we've tried it at other. We've spent lots of money in other ways. You know, when you're an independent, by the time you spend all the money on the touring, and then by the time you the videos and the recordings on your own and all that stuff, I mean, it adds up anyway. So I thought, you know, and plus, it's kind of a seasoned band. You know, we've been around for a while. The players are great. You know, we a vote of confidence was our first gig out of the gate for West Coast Slackers was the main stage on Saturday night at Sunfest. So that was our first gig booked as a band. Now, it's not by accident. I mean, the fact that me and May had been around for a while, Clyde knew all the promoters, you know, it was like, here, check out this band. And that was a big vote of confidence because we were on the main stage and it's not an easy spot. It's like the 5 o'clock spot where you got to get everybody to come down, right? And what was really cool is about halfway through the set, I look up and the guys from Lone Star are sitting, you know, kind of in that little balcony area looking down, and they followed us to our backstage after, and we took pictures of it. You know, we got to be doing something right here because nobody knew our songs. Nobody, I mean, we did a few covers, whatever, but it was like, I think it's worth taking the risk. I think I think this band is ready. I think Brian agreed. He goes, yeah, this band's ready. The songs are there. It's a strong band. So let's see what happens. You know what I mean?
Well, that's really cool, man. That's really cool. Like, so fun to try something a little bit different, you know, like, why not? Like you say, like, we're going to spend money regardless. So like, why don't we try this way then? Like,
exactly. So, and it's a little different way approach, and we'll see where it goes. Like you said, it's just kind of one day at a time and one battle at a time, and just and most importantly, just keep having fun. Can't forget to have fun, right? That's the whole point of it.
Hopefully that just goes hand in hand. So like, how far, like, you've got the Edmonton stuff, you're gonna rip some shows with both bands and stuff, but like, how far in advance are you? Like, do you guys have plans into summer now? Are you into fall?
Yeah,
like, how far in advance do you go?
There's kind of a few street festivals and rib fests and stuff that are popping up for both bands right now. Kind of, we're kind of in a, like, basically we're waiting for our EP to be done, and we'll kind of see where that goes as far as West Coast Slack. But so we're just kind of with West Coast Slackers, it's just sort of in our backyard kind of gigs, right? BC, Alberta kind of thing. Yeah. And then with Trigger Mafia, we're going to be going to radio soon with it and see where that goes. And then we got our buddy Cam Moon just pushing so hard. He's doing such a good job working the angles. He sent me, you know, that video I sent you, that's in the Boston.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. That's great.
You know what I mean? So he's out there working it. He's a very nice guy and everybody knows him. So I think it'll take a little time, but the word will get out and we'll see where it goes. So right now it's just kind of like gigs in BC, Alberta. And then we'll follow where it takes us. You know, if it becomes more Trigger Mafia gigs, then we do more gigs. If it becomes West Coast, and maybe it'll be a balance of both. I mean, I think of that guy from Slipknot. Remember?
Corey Taylor. Yeah. I mean, Slipknot, Stone Sour, you know, he does his own solo stuff. Like, in fact, I was funny you say that. Cause I was literally just thinking that just as you said it, like, fucking Corey Taylor can do it. You can do it too.
Yeah, man. Why not? And I'm also, the other thing I'm also doing too, because these guys, this core of players that I have, Carlos is in on keyboards, Jay Witter on bass, Rod Semph on drum. These guys, they're like brothers to me. I've been playing them for a long time, but they're also wicked players. They're wicked in the studio. These are not like 20-year-old guys that are trying to figure out. These are seasoned players, studio level players. And I've been developing a young jazz pop thing, kind of going for that Michael Bublé thing. So I'm dabbling into management and development as well, right? Mm. And I use those guys for it. You know, and I'm also been approached to co-manage sort of a young 21-year-old sort of really nice husky voice country artist too. And I'm most likely going to use those guys. So they're kind of like a modern day wrecking crew. They just kind of go where I go. And our goal is to just play. And we'll go where it takes us. You know what I mean? So that's sort of what we're doing.
I love it. Where is the best place for people to find you guys? Like, where are you most active, do you think, on social media?
Well, I mean, go to the websites and then you can find everything else from there. Then you can go to the Facebook and the TikTok and all that stuff. We've got a guy out of Toronto, a buddy of mine. That's kind of another cool thing that happened is a buddy of mine called me up when we did Sunfest and he saw Trigger Mafia. You know, like, we were showing up in his feed and stuff. And he says, and he's really good with the online stuff. He has a company out in Toronto. He goes, dude, I want to help you. I said, well, I can't afford you. I don't care. I want to help you guys. And so he's been putting out these reels daily on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, because we, you know, hard to do all that stuff when you're trying to do everything else. Totally. And he's been doing a great job. And with Trigger Mafia, some of the TikTok stuff is starting to go viral. So, you know, 10,000, 20,000, you know, it's hard, right? You know, social media game is a tough game.
Well, dude, it's impossible, man.
Oh, dude, it's a grind. And he's been really helping us out. So we've been lucky there. So I would say just go to the website. It's really easy, triggermafia.com or thewestcoastslackers.com, and you'll find the links from there and stuff. So, and you'll see the Barn Burner hockey song video that's right there on the website, right at the front of the website. So
awesome.
Did you like that shameless plug, man, or what?
I love it, buddy. I love it, man. That's what it's about. That's what this is about. Right on, man. It's good to see your smiling face. And yeah, we'll keep in touch. And maybe we should get a Trigger Mafia podcast show at the Blue Light. Maybe, like,
I love that.
I've got my shows all the way through till the end of summer almost, but maybe like a, maybe let's touch base on like a fall thing if you guys are kicking around.
You say the word and we'll be there.
Beautiful, brother. Okay, man. Well, have a good night, and we'll talk to you soon. I'll tag you when I'm chucking the shit around.
All the best. Thank you.
Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and SoundCloud. Find us at Toddcast Podcast.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.